listeners, welcome to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180, your conversation station. Also on our podcast, we want to welcome our podcast listeners. Steve, say hello.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Biz Culture Matters. We have a great guest today.
Great guest today. Good stuff going on. The weather in Seattle's been somewhat mild and semi-non-rainy, so we always love that. Steve, you done anything recently in the rain?
No.
I see you
I
as
do my
a,
best to stay out of
I
it.
I see you as a dancing in the rain type fellow.
Not me.
Not so
me.
Much?
Not me.
More like couching
yeah,
in the
more
rain?
Yeah, couching in the rain is good. Couching in the rain is good.
Excellent. Give us a little lowdown, Steve. I know it's been a little while since we caught our listeners up on basically, we believe in excellent cultures. We believe in businesses and organizations functioning in a manner that people are fulfilled in their work, but also that those businesses and organizations are successful and prosperous. Give us a little definition of excellent cultures, what that is, and where we're going today.
Well, excellent cultures is about using the latest scientific technology to help business leaders read what's really going on below the surface in their business. I was meeting with a CEO of a large, successful property management firm the other day, and we were talking about his culture and what was going on. And, you know, culture is kind of like, you know, acne. Nobody really...
It has
you know,
a white head.
Exactly.
Nobody really wants to pop it.
Well, but kind of. But really what's more about is that it's stuff that's going on below the surface in a company. And nobody sees it. Nobody pays attention to it. Most executives don't even realize it's going on until all of a sudden, you know, they get a boil, you know, a disgruntled employee, a class action lawsuit, a, you know, legal problem with a employee who feels like they were wrongfully terminated. You name it. There's all kinds of them.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, we've got this, you know, boil that's kind of popped up, and they feel like, well, let's just deal with this problem, get it out of the way.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that there's a whole bunch of other ones that are below the surface that are coming up.
Right.
And they're going to keep coming up. And until you deal with what's going on deep within the roots of people, how they think, how they feel, what they believe, how they communicate with each other,
right.
You know, sneaky corporate politics, all the things that go on when you have groups of people together that for whatever reason say they feel comfortable telling it like it is but really don't,
yeah.
That's what affects the culture of a business.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty amazing, actually quite entertaining to me, that a couple of weeks ago on one of our shows, I asked you to share with the customers if there were any slang terms that we use for cultures that people are gossiping and backbiting, and your response was, yeah, we call that normal.
Yeah, that's a normal culture. That's
but we work culture. On helping to change that normal and make a new normal, don't we? And it's not just about gossip and backbiting, but there's so much more deeper things that root up, that come out, like acne that you said, and those blackheads and those things
yeah.
that just come to the surface.
Yeah, and what goes on in most companies, you know, using the acne analogy, if we don't want to overuse it too much, because it's a little gross.
Yeah, but, it's a little
but
juvenile.
Yeah, yeah, well, you can tell that, you know, I've raised a lot of teenagers, one of which was you, but I think your
yes.
mom actually raised you. But what goes on, until you can get to the core and the roots of what are going on, just doing business as usual, and especially if your business is growing, it's kind of like a teenager feasting on, you know, French fries and cheeseburgers
yeah.
in terms of what it does to, you know, the acne. It just makes it worse, and you think it's making it better, but it doesn't. So
yeah.
we're exactly. dedicated on the show to helping the good guys win, and we've got a leader today who is a mentor of hundreds of CEOs and CIOs around the region, who has more knowledge bottled up inside of her brain on leadership and effectiveness and performance and improvement than anybody you could ever imagine. So we can hardly wait to start talking to Nancy.
Absolutely. We're excited to have Nancy Truitt on the show from Woods Creek Consulting Company. We don't always have fellow coaches on, but this is good. I'm excited that we have a fellow coach on today, and we're excited to welcome Nancy to the show. Welcome, Nancy. Are you there?
I am, and I'm looking forward to jumping right into this conversation.
Awesome.
Thanks for having
yeah.
me.
Well,
awesome.
Nancy's not a fellow coach. She's a great coach.
She's a great coach. That's right. She is superior in what she does. And Nancy, you're, from what I understand, you're a leadership coach. Would you tell us a little bit about your focus and expertise?
Well, I've been doing this work since 1989. That's when I ended my last day job. But I actually don't think of myself as an individual coach. I think of myself as an organizational coach, because where I focus my energy and time is the strategy, structure, and culture of the organization. And so that's why this was an interesting conversation for me, because I think there's so many moving parts that go into it. And so just looking forward to talking with you both about it.
How did you get into coaching?
I was way back when, in the 80s, I was running the small business programs for the Seattle Community College District. We had the first public-private partnership, the first business incubator in Seattle. While I was running that and bringing in outside consultants, I realized that we were still missing a pretty big piece, which is how to build these companies from the ground up. We could do the marketing and the finance and the IT. We could do all the infrastructure stuff, but there was still that set of questions that I know you deal with, Steve, around how do we set this up so that the people are getting the best and they are giving their best as part of the organization. And without not having that set of questions being addressed effectively, I found somebody that I thought was really good at it and partnered up and went out on my own to do this work, because I think it's important work.
No, that's awesome. And like most of our guests, we realize too that part of a great culture and being a great leader is that you're not 24/7 working. So I do want to share what we know of you, Nancy, is you've got a husband. You've celebrated your 20th anniversary last summer.
Mm-hmm.
You have two children. Tell us about your family a little bit.
I have two children. I actually count three, but it's a little odd. I have a niece who's in her 40s now that came to live with me when one of my sisters was killed way back in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
And I finished raising her, although she was pretty much grown.
Yeah.
And so I think of her as a daughter. And then I have a birth daughter who's 30. So I have a 42-year-old, a 30-year-old, and a 19-year-old.
Awesome.
So I've stretched it out. My 19-year-old is a son who we adopted.
Awesome. Steve knows about adopting.
We know about with our 11 foster children, 9 of which we adopted.
Wow.
I have great empathy for you, Nancy, and I can tell just by what you've shared with us and our listeners thus far, that 19-year-old is giving you energy and helping you live a long life, because there's lots of challenges that teenagers have these days that having a mom around that knows what's going on can really help.
Yeah.
And he came home last week with a new puppy.
Oh, awesome. That's even better. So now now you have your first grandchild. Only
grandpuppy.
Grandpuppy.
Yes, my grandpuppy.
Well, I don't know. I want our listeners to know, too, that you published a book in 2005 called The Founding Factor. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's The Founder Factor. It's
Founder
the
factor,
role
sorry.
Of a founder. One of the things I've studied over the time that I've been doing this work is the role of the founder as they start companies and the glorious skills that they bring to it, the stages that companies go through as they grow, and how you make it through some of those transition points, and especially how the founder plays their role, because their role in a startup stage company is very different from a scale-up stage company, from a company that's really optimizing effectively.
Yeah, that's a huge distinction that we run into with a lot of our friends and stuff that we talk with. There's a big difference between somebody founding something and established companies from building culture to changing culture.
And it's, it's interesting because it's not just companies. As I was doing that research and that work, it's not-for-profits, it's churches, it's all kinds of organizations. Anybody that's got a powerful idea that they think will change the world, and most of these founders are driven by benevolence, quite frankly.
Wow.
They want to do something that really makes a difference. Well, isn't that the profile of somebody who's starting a very impactful not-for-profit?
Yeah,
too?
Absolutely. Where do our listeners pick up The Founder Factor?
These days, you can get it on Amazon. You can also get it off woodscreek.com. And it's cheaper at woodscreek.com.
Of course.
Go to woodscreek.com.
Woodscreek.com. Get the book, The Founder Factor. I'm going to pick it up for sure.
It's short enough that you can, by design, it's short enough so that you can read it as you're going from Seattle to Silicon Valley. So it's a couple hours. It's a fairly quick read, but I think it is useful.
Brilliant.
So, Nancy, tell us how many leaders are you involved in this peer group mentoring with these days?
I have 175 currently, and let me back up. So my consulting practice is a one-on-one with companies, and I work with the CEO and their executive team to help them bring the company through stages of growth. But I've also, years and years ago, I decided that because I was working with a variety of different companies, and they were all really dealing with a similar set of questions, I thought years ago, these people should talk because they're dealing with so many of the same questions. So I started a series of breakfast meetings that have been going now for almost 15 years. They're by invitation only. You have to be a certain profile to be invited in. There are two different groups for CFOs, the chief financial officer, There's one big one for Chief Information Officer, which tends to be the CIOs from all the major enterprises here in Seattle. There's one for Chief Marketing Officers, one for Sales Executives, one for Operating Executives. They meet monthly, and the combined membership at the moment is 175 or 176 members. They pretty much represent the Seattle business community, from Weyerhaeuser and Alaska Airlines and Expedia and Nintendo and Children's Hospital and the smaller companies like Data.io or Airbiquity or Pacific Plumbing or Zoomies. It's pretty much everybody in Seattle.
Incredible. Well, we're going to go into a break right now. We're going to head into our first break of the show. We are with Nancy Truitt. And when we get back, I do want to let listeners know we are talking to a Seattle local. And Nancy, you make your own biodiesel.
Yes.
I'm interested to hear about that as soon as...
And Zach, by the way, my name is Nancy Truitt Pierce.
Nancy Truitt. I am so sorry. Thank you. Listeners, you're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTcultures or Facebook/excellentcultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. I'm Zach Gander. We're on with Steve Gander and Nancy Truitt. We're excited about our wonderful guest today. Nancy, tell us about the biodiesel before we get into some of the heavy
stuff. Hold on a second. Before we go to the biodiesel, we glitched Nancy's name before the break, and she did a wonderful job of correcting us. Nancy Truitt Pierce. So is your husband going to listen to this radio show, Nancy?
Yeah, he probably will.
Well, so all apologies.
No problem.
Nancy Truitt Pierce. Tell us about the biodiesel.
Besides, he's got a different last name. He wouldn't take either of mine.
I love it.
Yeah, good.
Okay, so biodiesel.
So we only offended you, not your husband.
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful.
My husband and I live on a small acreage out in Woods Creek Valley. That's where Woods Creek Consulting comes from. And we are very environmentally sensitive, so we won't use any chemicals anywhere on the ground. When it was time for me to try to figure out how to be less impactful on the earth through my car, I decided a diesel. And since we have horses, I can do biodiesel in the same clothes that I go muck the stall in. So I've got a little rig in my garage where I can process old oil from the fryers that you use in the restaurants and make it into diesel that I can put in my car. It's a very cool thing.
That's awesome.
Is that hard to do, or did you have to get a PhD in chemistry?
No, I did go to a training program because there's a little bit of a science experiment somewhere in there, but mostly it's pretty simple. You have to warm up the oil for a while. I use an old hot water heater as a cooker, and then you add a couple of chemicals in, so you have to be a little bit careful with the chemicals. And there's some waste product that comes out, but it's all pretty good. It's pretty easy and pretty environmentally sensitive. So it's really, I feel proud that I'm taking old oil out of the waste stream.
Yeah.
And I also recycle the bins that I get it in, the QBs, and then I use it in my car. I don't make enough to drive my car completely on biodiesel, but that's why it's kind of cool, is that you can put regular diesel with it and it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's great.
That is great.
That's great. So, Nancy, tell us a little bit about how does an executive get an invitation to one of your exclusive by invitation only groups?
Well, they have to be the right profile first. And then as long as they fit the profile, we're delighted to invite them. If somebody is, one of your listeners is interested in one of the groups, they should go to woodscreek.com and look at the profile. It's listed there as part of our website. We're just redoing the website, and they're just getting ready to launch it again. So if they run into problems, they can just let me know. But as long as they fit the profile, just let me know.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Catch that website, listeners, woodcreeks.com.
Woodscreek.com.
And make sure you check out the profile. So, Nancy, one of the reasons that I really wanted to have you on the show was because of all of your experience working with leaders for so many years. And, I mean, you must hear, you know, literally hundreds, if not thousands, of strategies and insights and opinions and problem-solving tactics and techniques in your groups on a monthly basis. As you know, our focus on this series of shows is developing an ideal culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement. So we wanted to hear, you know, from all of your experience and all the companies that you work with, how would you describe a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement? What's your vision for that?
Well, and I want to back us up a little bit, too.
Go ahead.
Because one of the things that I've really paid attention to, and Steve, I suspect that you've read all of Jim Collins' work.
Oh, yes, very much. Good to great.
Yeah. So starting just with Built to Last, one of his first books that he wrote, if you go into the back of that book, there's this set of appendixes back there.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things he did was talk about the cultures of each of those companies. And one of the things that's really remarkable about his research and his findings is that there are different cultures for different companies, and they all work, provided they're aligned up with the business that you're in and the customers that you serve. And so that's a key point I want to put out there, because what you guys are really focused on with the ethics side, that's ubiquitous. That's every culture ought to be ethical, and people won't feel good about working in a company if they don't feel like there's basic ethics and purpose there. But then the next step is making sure the culture is really reinforcing in a dynamic way the business that you're in. And so I don't know if... going down that road, there's a lot we can talk about around that.
So tell us what your thoughts are on connecting the dots between right values, right culture, right business. Give us some tips. Our listeners love to hear, you know, insights that they can deploy into their businesses.
Sure. Well, and think about the different businesses. In the Built to Last book, he talks about the fact that Nordstrom's has a real heavy service-oriented culture, and that they reinforce that on a really regular basis. Part of why it works for them, it would not work at the same level in a place like Walmart, because Nordstrom's has better margins, and they have customers that are higher-end customers. So they have customers that really want to spend that kind of money and are willing, and that's what you need so you can afford that kind of culture. But it's totally reinforcing. The culture reinforces the customer experience, and the customer being willing to come back and buy again reinforces the culture and supports the culture. Whereas Southwest Airlines was the kind of culture that was very spirit-based, you needed to turn those planes as quickly as possible, and that's what made your business successful. And so a spirit-based culture was absolutely perfect for that. And that's kind of the key lesson that I took out of that, is that the culture really has to line up with the keys to your business and the kind of customers that you attract and want to reattract on an ongoing basis.
That's really cool, Nancy. A question kind of from out of left field, so to speak. One of the, given your understanding of this Collins principle of, you know, different cultures for different companies, and they all work as long as you've got the right fit, most of our work over the last 35 years has been involved in, you know, going to the deeper issues of culture, you know, what drives the values as opposed to the values. And we've identified about a dozen factors, four of them positive, four of them semi-positive, and four of them that can be just totally negative that we measure inside of firms the four positive that we found that are very consistent is if you have an achievement culture, a culture where people are setting and achieving goals of their own free will and their own accord, not because the boss forces them to, is a really good thing. If you have a self-actualization culture where people are about being all that they can be and continuously improving because that's who they are, not that's what their boss is telling them to do.
Yeah.
If you have a culture that is more team-oriented than it is silo-oriented, it's something that benefits in almost every industry. And then if you have a culture that the human beings care about each other as fellow human beings as opposed to, you know, just what's your function and what's your disposable value to the company. I mean, those seem to be, let's say, the four positive factors that drive every culture. So my question is, with your experience with so many different industries and different, you know, types of cultures that fit with a service culture versus a turn the planes fast culture, is the example you gave us with Southwest, have you seen anything, you know, that is consistent among everybody that if you're going to give advice to our listeners who run a technology firm compared to a retail firm compared to a manufacturing firm, are there any common threads that you would say would fit for everybody if they're looking for a culture that is sustainable, high performance, and effective?
Well, I like your four, the caring, achievement, self-actualized, or and team. Those are all great cultural imperatives. One of the things that I overlay it with, this idea that you have to have the right culture for the right business, is that if the culture isn't lined up with the business, it's hard to be a really good team if you're not aligned around the kind of business that you're in and what the key drivers for that business are. And so one of the things that Collins talked about is that these cultures, if they, you know, they were very strong cultures, therefore when you fit those cultures, you really were part of the team and you were really part of that whole self-actualization process. And if you weren't, you basically were rejected like some kind of a problem. And so that's why I like that. I want to overlay it with that, is that you have to have all of it. You have to have key leadership that really cares about people and wants it to be successful for them and has that kind of strategic mindset that says, you know, what kind of people do we need here? Because it all starts with hiring first. Do we have the right folks to drive the company in the way it needs to go? Can I treat them appropriately as a leader? Will I, you know, let things, people, what people always want from their boss, they want to know what's going on. They want the information. You know, they don't want to be operating in a vacuum and in the dark. And they want to feel like the boss cares about them as a person and is watching out for their best interest and that they can trust the boss. Those are the things that I know people look for repeatedly in their business. And it has to, you know, they have to fit the right culture for that company for it to be effective.
So let me make sure I understand this, and by way of clarification for myself, in hearing what you're saying, because your perspective is very, very valuable, and I find it's extremely valuable because so many of the businesses that we, you know, have served over the last 35 years, they read the Collins books and they get the right culture and the right people and hire people that fit with your culture. In fact, we interviewed a CEO on the show a few weeks back, a wonderful woman, Margot Engberg. She's the founder of Pinkabella Cupcakes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the podcast listeners is on our site, excellentcultures.com/podcast. You would love to listen to Margot because this is the title of the podcast is Business with a Heart. I mean, this was a stay-at-home mom who adopted four children, three from Guatemala, and she put the kids in a English as a second language school, which I know education is another one of your passions, Nancy, and we'll talk about it here in a second. But in the process of this English second language school, she would bring cupcakes for her kids on their birthday and found out that there were so many poor kids who had no birthday celebration and no treats. So she started making cupcakes for the kids who didn't have treats on birthday. Parents and people who tasted and thought you should sell these are wonderful. And she, you know, she finally got up enough courage and talked the Redmond Town Center into renting her a space for 6 months, figured out, which understand doesn't happen in retail, figured out that if she could sell 84 cupcakes in a day, she could pay the rent. And sold 2,000 the first day and then is now open 5 stores in 3 years and just going full speed. But what we heard from Margot was just this love for people and this love for business and this love for serving and this passion about it that she based all of her hiring practices on and her management practices on. And in the nature of her business, because it's a product and service oriented business, and you know, you can get cupcakes from a lot of people, not just having a good product, but having the right kind of a service heart to serve with her people. All of their tips go to charity. You know, what I hear you saying is that that might really work really well, that kind of passion, that kind of mindset in a business that is both service and product, but it might not work as well in a manufacturing plant. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, not entirely. The part that I would, I'd say that I absolutely agree with what your work is too, Steve, is that that people need to feel like the boss cares about them and they care about the world and they're trying to do something good.
And that's in every culture, right?
And I think that's in every single business.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
That you have to have. I don't think businesses are very successful if they don't have a pretty deep set of values that are, at some level, somebody could look at it and say, I can subscribe to those. I think those are good things, that they make the world a better place. I think the businesses that aren't really grounded in making the world better at some level have a harder time being successful. And when I think about it, I actually even drew out a three-legged stool at one point as kind of a way to think about businesses, because you have to have the vision, and the vision has to be a market-centric vision. It has to say, I'm going to serve somebody's set of needs. And then and that's a plank on the top of the stool, but the other plank on the top of the stool is those values that say, we're not doing this just to make money. We're making money. We need to make money so we can keep doing it. But the real reason we're doing it is to serve the marketplace in a way that moves things forward and up. And therefore, you need leaders that both care about that, demonstrate that, are true to that, are transparent around that, and care about the people and the way the people are working. The cultural overlay is also about, how do we work together? So we have these values and we have this vision. How do we work together so that we can all feel good about it, so we can contribute our best to whatever it is that we're trying to do? And that's when I start seeing it depends on the business, the right kind of culture, and that culture will attract people. And we have to kind of line up who are the people that work best there. So Nordstrom's really needs people that are very service-oriented and very customer-centric. And the folks at Southwest probably need folks that just love to just take action and get things done and make it as quick and as efficient as possible. Just different personalities, and that's okay.
Yeah, very well said.
We're heading into a break. Love the conversation going on surrounding business, culture, values, vision. We'll be right back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
Hello, everybody. We are not talking with Nancy Truitt Pierce, and we just got done hearing a wonderful rendition of leadership and a three-legged stool of vision, values, and culture. Steve, what were you going to lead into right after that?
Well, in listening to your conversation in the last segment, Nancy, it reminded me of one of the leaders that we've done culture projects for is a guy by the name of Jack Hollis. He's the most recently the senior VP of the Scion division for the Toyota Motor Sales USA company, the U.S. Subsidiary of Toyota. And you know, Jack has recently been promoted to a much larger position, and he's the VP of the marketing division for all of Toyota North America because of the work that he did with the culture there at the Scion division. And we'll have Jack on the show here in a few weeks. We've got him booked for the show, and you'll want to listen for sure, listeners. But one of the things that Jack told us, he's a faith-based guy, and he has no problem saying that his personal values that he has found a way to integrate into the business are, he loves God, he loves people, and he loves to compete. And, of course, the values of the business are all about caring for people and serving people, but they also have products that are manufactured and sold through a dealer network. But one of the things that Jack told us that sounds like it's really resonating with what you're saying, Nancy, is that what he finds in working in a big company environment like Toyota, and so many of his friends and colleagues work for very large, Fortune 100 companies, is that businesses have a tendency to forget about, they get so focused on sales and quarterly reports and earnings and all of the numbers that they have a tendency to forget about why they really got into business to begin with, and that it was about serving their customers, and that's where their passion was. And then it was about serving their people, because their people were about serving their customers. And that when they would, when businesses and leaders got lost in the numbers, so to speak, or just got refocused in the numbers, it was so easy to forget about those things that you've reminded us are so important. And I want to shift here with the next question to the negative side. The four areas that we measure in cultures that we find are consistent as to things that always slow every business down are, avoidance, where, people have a tendency to avoid conflict. They sweep it under the table until it burns a hole in the table, so to speak. Blame fixing, not my fault, it was the weather, it was the other department, it was something else that's out of my control, giving up accountability, resistant to change, stuck in the past and non-innovative. We call that conventional behavior. And then what I call a kiss-up culture, people nodding their head and smiling because they get more gratification out of being liked and well thought of than they do telling it like it is. So with these kind of four negative elements that, have a tendency to just kind of sneak into the roots of a business culture, have you witnessed any examples, and can you give our listeners any tips on how to, watch out for those, those sneaky things that sneak into the culture that kind of become the enemies of all the good things you shared in the last segment?
Sure, and great set of four, too. When I see those symptoms in businesses, one of the things I profoundly believe walking into an organization is that people got up that morning with every intention of it going well and right. So they walked into their offices or their factory floors or wherever, and their intention was for it to go well. It doesn't always go well. Sometimes we have those symptoms that show up. And so what I always want to look at is, like, what's in the way of them being able to do it the way they intended to do it in the first place? So I typically look at the rest of the structure in the system. I like to look at the whole system and say, if there's something here that's in the way of getting the job done. And typically when I come down to it, it's things like we aren't clear about what we're really trying to accomplish as a group. Because if we all knew that, if we knew where right was, we'd be doing everything we could to get there. And that's a leadership need. It's a lot of hard work to get it tight enough and right enough so people really understand what it is that we're trying to get done so that they can get on board with getting it done. If it's not getting done, then we're probably colliding into each other. The other big issue that I see in organizations when these symptoms show up is that we don't have the decision making set at the right level. We have people making decisions that could be very clear. We could have clarified role and responsibility and authority and accountability, and it still may not be right because it's got to be at the right point of information flow for it to be correct. And so when I look at those kind of things, I typically don't believe that people are just being jerks because they want to be jerks. If they're being jerks, and sometimes they are, why? What's in the way of them doing what they know is the right thing to do and that they intended to do when they got up in the morning? Kind of a recap, are we really clear about the vision? Are we really clear about what it takes to get it right? one of the techniques, by the way, that I think is the most powerful of all in building the right culture in your organization is catch people that are doing it right and make a legend of them. And this happens in a lot of organizations. Nordstrom's does this. Costco did this in spades. Jim Senegal was a master at repeating the legends over and over again when he saw what somebody doing the right thing so that people knew what right was. If they know what right is, if they know where we're trying to go, they will try to get there with us. And all we need to do then is celebrate them, you know, and then challenge them, you know, encourage them to go even further and faster and farther. But mostly just appreciate them. If we can get to that point, if we're not able to just appreciate the success they're having, then we as leaders haven't done our job completely yet.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Very good.
Had the good fortune and the opportunity to work on a project for Jim Senegal years ago when it was about developing a process to integrate the ethics of Costco into what at that time had been tens of thousands of employees and hundreds of stores and nations all over the world. And, you know, right on. I mean, the simplicity of the perspective and the communications and the values. In fact, the conversation that we had with Jim was, you know, he was telling us about how they built the business like a family sitting around a conference table and talking and communicating with each other and sharing the good, the bad, and the ugly, and then developing systems and processes and principles to go about fixing it. But when they got so big that there were so many people and it was so fast, they needed new tools and new ways to share that with people and integrate it and kind of bring folks on board. But, you know, wonderful example, and the success that Costco has had is great. But as I hear you speaking, it sounds like the what's in the way of people who are well-intentioned, who come to work to do good things and great things every day, get in the way. It sounds like I'm hearing you say, too, one has to do with the clarity and the other one has to do, you know, with the structure. Is that correct?
Yeah, the clarity, the structure, setting things up correctly with the decision-making in the right level. Structure is one of, the most difficult things of all for people to get right, because inside any organization, what you're trying to do is to get information and learning to flow along different fault lines. So we want information to flow about the kinds of customers that we're serving and what they care about and what they need. We also want to flow information along the products, what we're learning about doing products and how we can do that better, or services that we're putting out there. We need it to flow geographically. We need it to flow along processes. We need it to flow along functional lines. And every org chart gives you two of those, and you can't get all five at once. And so it's always tricky. You always have tension inside every single organization around the structure, and you always end up with silos at some level. And so as you're doing that, you still need to have decisions at the right place so that things can move quickly and efficiently with the right information, and so people can get lined up with it. And that's kind of a complex theory, but it goes. I think it goes really well with, if we understand strategy, if we've got the right structure, we've got the right processes, if we've got the right culture, the rest becomes much easier.
Okay, I've got a big question for you to be thinking about, and we may not be able to finish it on this segment, but maybe after our next break in a while we can. Working with a client recently that is has become a very successful mid-market business, primarily a service business, and have done a wonderful job and grown, and, you know, family business getting big would be a good way to describe it, you know, and into the hundreds of employees now, and really has a scalable service, and it's working very well. Yet what we run into, and I've seen this, and this probably speaks to your work that you wrote on in your book, and, you know, about founders and what happens with entrepreneurial businesses as they grow up. What we run into is that typically what leaders think when they run into a boil in the acne, so to speak, is that, okay, we need to change our structure because we're too big to handle this many people, and we need smaller spans of control so people can communicate better and what have you. And it has always been my experience that a good structure is a basic fundamental of having business be successful. But if you've got these deep underlying beliefs that people developed in the old structure, like sharing openly and candidly how you think and how you feel about certain things with certain people is just something you don't do around here. Or, conflict, you can talk to so-and-so about it, but you better not, you know, let, let someone else know that that's what's going on, because then that will cause adverse repercussions. And typically, 90% of the fear of these adverse repercussions is usually imagined. It's not even accurate, because then you go talk to the person who they're talking about, and it is, you know, they're scratching their head saying, how did they ever get that idea? So, Nancy, question to you with your experience. It's been my experience that we can change the structure and get a better result, but until we get to the root of what's going on with these deeper issues and address them and put communication processes in place that, you know, kind of force up to the surface where people can talk about it in an open, candid, safe manner, structures kind of get bogged down and slow down in the process. So what are your thoughts along those lines? What have you experienced? How do we get at these deeper issues so that the new structure doesn't get bogged down in the gunk that was created by the old structure?
And we'll get right to that answer from Nancy right after the break. You are listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM, your conversation station.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back. Steve, you were just leading into a conversation with Nancy, and she's chomping at the bit to give, she's ready to give an expertise answer and around the root of these issues. Do you want to rephrase that really quick so our listeners through the break get
to
get
quickly,
it?
What I asked Nancy before the break was what happens when we're creating a new structure for a company that's growing to improve the clarity and improve the organizational side of improving communication, but people are still stuck in the habits, especially the sneaky politics that kind of, you know, grew up in the last structure and are holding back. How do you address that, Nancy? How do we deal with it?
And it's a great question too, Steve, because it does, when things aren't going well, when there's been confusion in the organization for a long time, folks get their feelings hurt, they do things that they are jerks, they do behave in bad ways, that offends other people, and that whole spiral can just spiral into the ground. And so how do we turn that around, and how do we get the group to let everybody out of jail? How do we get the group to say, this is not how we want to operate, because people don't want to operate that way. That is not the way human beings want to operate inside their work settings. They want to be able to go in and trust each other and admire each other and feel like everybody's pulling their weight and everybody's, you know, doing the right thing for the organization. Couple things that I've tried over the years, because, you know, you do have to just change the momentum and move it the other direction. And part of that can be sitting down and saying, how do we really want this to work? What does right look like for us as part of our working relationship as a team of people trying to get this job done? And that can be a conversation that's a really big conversation throughout the whole organization. It can be just the executive team and then take it out to the others. It can be individual work teams. One of the things, one of the kind of silly things I've done that actually turns out to be pretty effective, is to have everybody get in the room and say, okay, we're not going to, this hasn't been going well. We don't like how it's operating. We want it to be different. Always start with what's working. Always start with where you want to end up. Always start with future vision. And then say, and we know that there's just some stuff that's gone by that's left us feeling cranky. So write it down on a piece of paper, and let's just get rid of it. You can burn it, and I've burned them in a pot of just a potted plant pot, you know, and you can just light them on fire and let them go into the pot. Use the ashes to plant something green and growing. And sometimes you can just, you know, now from here going forward, we have to give up being upset about what somebody did or said in the past and move forward with this new vision of how we want to work together.
That's a great example, especially if you can keep the fire marshal from coming into the conference room when the fire
that.
Is going.
Right.
But a very, very, very symbolistic. So great insight. So asking you to put your coach's hat on once again. Let's say the aggressive defensive side of what happens in cultures that just kind of grows up when you have people. The four areas that we look to measure there are perfectionism on steroids would be a good way to say it, where the quality expectations go so high that all the leaders can see is mistakes and that's all they point out. Competition that's gone awry, where people get more emotional gratification out of competing against each other than they do competing against their goals or the real competition. Egos out of control, where leaders overemphasize and put too much confidence in how good they are and how effective they are, that translates and transmits through to everybody. And then a culture where a good, healthy debate never happens to the point of a consensus, where there's always a meeting after the meeting. You know, you have a consensus, but then people go have a beer or they go have a cup of coffee and it's a different consensus. When you see those things kind of happening, and you've dealt with leaders that maybe have an ego out of control and they don't know it, that you know, have gotten to perfectionism on steroids and they don't know it, how do you coach those folks and how do you help them, you know, change those mindsets and behaviors and patterns that sabotage the success of the organization?
One of the things I like to talk about is the levels of leadership that. Thinking about how people end up in the leadership track, almost always their first step onto leadership is because they were really good at something. So one of the analogies I use is cherry pie baker. If you are somebody who bakes cherry pies and you are really, really, really good at baking cherry pies, they're probably going to put you in charge of the cherry pie bakers. They're going to make you the lead or the supervisor or the manager for that group of people that bake cherry pies. And that's perfect because then you can show them how to do it. But it's not perfect because it's a completely different set of skills. And so when you are good at being a cherry pie baker, part of what happens is that then your perfectionist gets carried away because you're the one that was the best. And now you're trying to teach these people how to do it, and they're just not doing it right, you know, because they just don't get it. And so that first step of leadership is almost always someone who is a subject matter expert or an individual contributor who is very good at what they were doing, and now they get to be a leader. What I don't think we do a very good job of is helping them learn the other set of skills that they have to do as that leader, because it's a completely different set of skills that they need. And so where, you know, as we go along the levels then, when you become the director or the vice president or the CEO, it's just a different set of skills again that you need. And I think that's why coaches exist. I think that's exactly why people like you are out there in the world. It's like, okay, that might have worked. And one of my techniques, by the way, is even with my founder work with the founders, it's like the fact that you did a good job during the first stage of growth, that's great. It just doesn't translate to today because now the company's in a different stage of growth and you need to do things differently. Same thing for leaders. That may have been being the smartest dog on the block, being the one that knew how to do it best. That's why you got here. That's not the job anymore. Now the job is, you know, coaching and training the people that are under you, and they need compliments. They need it to be fun. They need to be celebrated for what they do right, not constantly picked at for what they're doing wrong. And so it's really kind of, in my mind, it's kind of helping them learn how to shift those gears and change directions in their careers, because it's a new job now.
So leading from encouragement and pointing out what you want in the right way, as opposed to constantly criticizing what's wrong with the cherry pie.
Absolutely. Celebrate what they're doing right. Correct in private and very infrequently. You know, especially if you're in conflict, go back up to the goal. Like, what are we really trying to accomplish here? Remember, we're trying to, you know, make 50 cherry pies by Tuesday. Okay, hang on, I don't think we're getting there. What do we need to do to get there? And boy, I really like what you did here and here and here. What else do you need so you can be successful?
Very well said. So, Nancy, Gallup now tells us that over 70% of workers in American companies are effectively disengaged with their work based on the last survey. What connection have you seen in the leaders that you've coached and mentored and in your peer leadership forums between ethics, values, culture, and employee engagement? And what advice can you give to our listeners to enhance the employee engagement in a way that is meaningful and sustainable rather than, you know, a short-term Band-Aid?
Yeah, and I think it's so much about what we've already talked about here today, too. It's like, do you know what business you're in? Do you know what the keys to success are so that you can get the business there? Have you communicated that really well to your employees so that they can get on board, so it doesn't feel like a bait and switch somehow? I mean, if they're putting time and energy into doing something, they think it's the right thing to do. And so if it's not the right thing to do, it really feels bad to them when they find out they haven't been doing the right thing. And that's part of what pushes them away from engagement. So how do we define and describe success, both in the business that we're in and the culture that we're trying to create? And then how do we celebrate the steps when they're getting closer to that? Because I believe they will try to make the right choice if we let them, if we get things out of the way so they can. And then how do we celebrate, especially celebrate people that are good examples of doing it right? And, you know, it's like Jim Senegal talking about the salmon story, if you've ever heard that legend. It's legendary at Costco.
Why don't you give us a quick update for those of our listeners who haven't heard it?
Yeah, and I think he tells it at every single, not anymore because he's no longer CEO, but he used to tell it at every single store opening, at every single employee gathering that he had. And it was about a buyer who went out and found salmon that was better quality and less price and passed that savings along to the customers. And so Costco's always had this belief that they have a certain margin. That's all they're just going to add their part of the margin on top of the cost. If they save money, the customer saves money, and they get the highest quality for the lowest price. And so there were people that came to that buyer and said, aren't you going to go ahead and sell it at the higher price? It's a better quality. We'd still be better for the customer if we sold it at the same price we've been selling it and at a higher quality. And the buyer said, absolutely not. We got it for less money. We're going to pass that savings on to the customer. And that was the right choice,
Yeah, very, very true. I've heard him tell that same story, but the product was Calvin Klein jeans and a huge volume purchase they made. But the principle is what's important.
Yes, and that's what it is. It's about, because what he's doing by telling those legends is reinforcing the values as a company, and those values are perfectly aligned with the kind of customers they have and the kind of business they're trying to build. And so it helps people know what right is. It helps them figure out how they can contribute to the business's success and what it would take to contribute to that. And that's what people want. That's what engages them. They want to succeed. They want to be winners. They want to do what's the right thing to do and then be celebrated for it. How do we get that for them?
That's fantastic.
That's great.
A great way to end the show, too, because we're out of time. What a wonderful thought for listeners to go, you know, to take away from the show today. This show flew by.
Nancy.
Apparently, we need to have Nancy back.
Well, you got to come back. I mean, I don't think our listeners know all that you have to share yet.
I kept looking at the clock, and I'm going, where's the time going? Like, this is one of the fastest hours ever.
And it's been a delight, and you guys are both great to work with. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome.
Good. We're excited.
You know, leaders all over the world are going to listen to this podcast and benefit immensely from your coaching, Nancy. We're so grateful for what you've shared today. Listeners, be sure and pass this along. You'll find it on the podcast at excellentcultures.com/podcasts, plural. And then be sure and visit Nancy's website. And give it to us one more time, Nancy.
WoodsCreek.com.
WoodsCreek.com. And get her book, especially
if
you're an entrepreneur.
I'm on it right now, looking at the founder factor. On the site. We're glad you've been listening, listeners. Thanks again. Again, connect with us. Ask the experts at excellentculture.com. We want to talk with you today. You've been listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM, your conversation station. Have a great week.